Welcome to Juno Afternoon. I'm Andy Klein. I'm here to send you off to the weekend with some conversations I hope you'll enjoy coming up on Juno Afternoon today. In case you haven't noticed, February is Romeo Month, and that's as in Juno's friendly wolf, who's remembered in many ways, and author Nick Jans is here to share some of his memories. Also, how cross-country skiers have their own special tribute to Romeo coming up on the first annual Romeo race. Ice cream lovers, stick around. We're going to have Foodie Friday coming up with Mark Wheeler from Copa. It's a virtual Foodie Friday, but I get to taste the ice cream. I'm so excited. And what is it that keeps Jessica Hood coming back year after year as one of the mainstays of Juno's wearable art show? Well, we'll talk to her about that. Coming up, some of the conversations ahead on Juno Afternoon. Well, the weather forecast for this Friday, February 11th, by the way, happy birthday, Mom, if you're listening down there in Florida. We're in for another one of those weather seesaws between snow and rain. Tonight's going to be warmer temperatures, and then that'll give the rain a little bit of an opening, and then the snow is going to start again. Been waking up and seeing the snow, so for tonight, rain and snow in the evening, then rain. No snow accumulation predicted for tonight, with the snow level rising up to about 1,500 feet in the evening. Lows in the mid-30s, and southeast winds about 20 miles an hour. For tomorrow, rain in the morning, chance of rain in the afternoon, and then for Saturday night, chance of rain in the evening, decreasing clouds, and lows in the lower 30s. Increasing clouds and patchy fog for Sunday and Sunday night, mostly cloudy. Sunrise, though, is getting a little bit longer days. That's the good news. And the sunrise for Saturday morning is at 7:33 a.m. and the sunset is at 4:49, about 9 hours and 16 minutes of daylight. So good news is that the days are getting longer. KTOO would like to acknowledge that we broadcast from the homelands of the Occoquan. The Clean AD have stewarded this area for thousands of years. Today, our studios sit on a spot once part of the Tidelands, now covered over with buildings, roads, and parking lots. We recognize those families who traveled to and from these Tidelands to fishing and hunting grounds and to gatherings in other villages and still cherish it as an important part of their way of life for today and for future generations.
Hanson Gress. Ka eat with the shoe ye, we kashuk a ye tin. Jin kat ka ke jin tak anachaya ha anikak. Gunashish.
And gunashish for being here with us today. Thank you. You're listening to Juno Afternoon. I'm Andy Klein. Not everyone can say that they've had a relationship with a wolf, let alone write a book about it. But when Nick Jans wrote A Wolf Called Romeo, he wanted to tell the story of not just any wolf, but one that Juno skiers and hikers came to know and love. Nick is giving a fireside lecture tonight, and that you can watch online and hear why this February is basically turning out to be Romeo Month, a month-long celebration of Romeo through music, art, and this lecture that's going to kick it off. Nick, thanks so much for joining us. Nick, you're down in Florida today. Appreciate you zooming in with us.
Yeah, well, I was supposed to be there, but it was one of those things that mean old Mr. Virus just kind of dictates to you.
That's right. Well, Nick, I remember Romeo so well. Had some really amazing experiences with him, just seeing him from a distance there on Mendenhall right. Lake, taking my dog, making sure I was keeping my dog on a leash, even though she was very interested in Romeo. But I think that we might be getting to the point where there's a lot of people that don't remember a firsthand experience with Romeo. And I'm wondering what your perspective is there as you're going to give a fireside lecture talk about that tonight.
Well, you know, that's the thing, is that history has a way of creeping up on you. You know, that's something that seems like something that was every day. I mean, to my mom and dad, World War II was something they went through.
That's right. Yeah.
And to us, it's in somewhere way back in the rearview mirror, let alone Vietnam, you know. And something like this wolf was such a unique experience. It was pretty much unheard of. I mean, it's one of the great wild animal human interactions of all recorded history. You know, really, I mean, that sounds pretty hyperbolic, but if you leave out the stuff that isn't documented, there just isn't a case of a wolf and a community being on good terms with each other.
It was quite amazing, and it was the talk of the town when it was happening. Remind us the period of time this was happening. How many years was it, and from what year to what year about?
It's hard to believe, but it was 2003 to 2008. So that means it was 18 years since we first saw that wolf.
Wow, yeah.
Give or take.
And just a 5-year period when that phenomena was happening.
Actually, it's about six. Mm-hmm. And some people say it's a little bit longer, because there was a time when there were rumors circulating about a wolf out by the glacier and down in the wetlands and so on. But it started getting nailed down in November of 2003, October, November 2003. And as the lake froze, he started appearing more and more out on the lake.
Yeah, now it was a winter phenomena, right? That's how I remember it.
It was for most people, but the wolf came down and used the wetlands areas there surrounding the lake when it was frozen. And of course, when it's all boggy, he was still around some of the time. And he definitely went up into the high country a little more. But there were people like, for instance, Harry Robinson, who will tell you that he had contact with that wolf during the summer and into the fall. And most people just saw him when he came down the lake. And he would disappear even during the winter, sometimes for days, weeks, or even more at a time. And every time he was gone, I thought, well, there he's gone, just going back to being a wolf. Or I think terrible thoughts about what might have happened to him. And then he appeared again, mm-hmm. and he kept coming back, and he kept coming back, and he kept rising from the dead, as it were.
Let's recap a little bit some of the, you know, what are the reasonings, what are some of the theories about why he appeared in the first place, why he was there alone, and then kind of the ideas behind why the relationship between the community and him progressed.
Okay, well, first part is that we will never know how exactly that wolf came to be, but there are a number of people who have said things with great certainty that they can't be really certain about. But we do know this, is that a female pregnant black wolf got hit by a taxi out in Back Loop Road in 2003, and he stopped. And he heard wolves howling. It was out near the bridge. And he heard wolves howling. And it was thereafter that this one wolf appeared. And some people say that he was her mate. I don't really buy that. I think he
was. It's certainly a romantic notion, isn't it? And to think that.
Sure. And it could have been. But he was a young guy, and not too many adolescent wolves have a wife and family any more than too many 16-year-olds do. Sure, it's biologically possible. So anyway, that's one possibility. But one thing I think is that very, very likely is that he was a sibling or some sort of a relative of that pack. And for whatever reason, the others moved off, the survivors moved off, and he decided to stay around. That much is pretty much, you know, I would say he was connected to that female wolf. But the reason for people kind of getting attached to him, who knows? Okay.
A wolf acting in that way, tolerating people,
sure.
The curiosity. Usually wolves, of course, are so much wanting to get away from where people are.
Sure. Yeah. Usually all you see is this furry butthole disappearing up over the hill. You know, if you catch a glimpse of a wolf, it's going away fast.
Yeah.
And it was, at first, people were pretty tenuous, and it was a pretty well-kept secret out there among a few, and everyone thought they were keeping a secret from everybody else.
Right.
They said, hey, I got something to tell you. There's a wolf out there. I said, oh, shit, I was going to tell you. And it went from there. So he grew, though, into being quite a celebrity, because once you have a 100-and-some-odd-pound black wolf out on an open lake wanting to socialize with people's dogs, and that's what he came for, is he came for our dogs. He wanted social contact, and that put him in touch with us, inevitably. And that's what I think is really remarkable about this story, is that it traces that conflicted, convoluted relationship between man's best friend, man's greatest fear, and us.
Yeah.
And that connection.
Is that what drew you to the story? What was it that drew you to the point where you actually wrote a book about it and really began studying this? And what was it that brought you in?
Well, first of all, I was a firsthand direct participant in the whole thing. The name Romeo came from my wife, Sherry. I mean, I lived out by the glacier, the last house there before Skater's Cabin. I built it and didn't know that I was doing that, so I would meet this wolf. And I came to Alaska in 1979 to be a wolf and bear biologist. I didn't end up doing that. I ended up living in Inupiaq villages in the far north and traveling with Inupiaq hunters and seeing wolves on my own out in the surrounding country. By the time I came south, got married to Sherry, I'd encountered many dozens of wolves. I can't even count them, singly, in pairs, in great packs, from a distance, close up. And I thought I was leaving that all behind. I came down to Juneau. Oh, I'm living with Fred Meyer up the road. And oh, there's a road. And lo and behold, there's a wolf literally at my doorstep. You know, the old saying, a wolf at the door, was a literal thing for 6 years on and off of my life out there. And so I had a direct personal engagement. He was waiting out there for our dogs and, you know, to come out and do what they had to do sooner or later, because he wanted to socialize. And my wife, Sherry, gave him the name Romeo because he seemed so attracted to our beautiful yellow lab, Dakota. And of course, that's her picture on the book cover there. But he had relationships with a number of dogs, and it was just the way that you and I have friendships and relationships. Some are closer, some are less close. Some people we're really drawn to, and we don't know exactly why. Sometimes we do, but there certainly was all variations, including where he had frenemies and even enemies among dogs.
So there was observed different behaviors with different specific individual dogs. Is that right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there were dogs that irked him. There were dogs that attacked him. I think of these two large German Shepherd dogs that he was having social contact with. And one of them suddenly turned on him and grabbed him by the back. And he was totally caught by surprise. And he had a wound on his back that was very visible for a year there, and then a scar after that. And that was from him being attacked, and he did nothing to those dogs. He had everything from dogs, like for instance, my neighbors, Tim and Maureen Hall's rabbity little border collie named Jessie. She'd run off this little, I don't know, 25-pound dog and disappear with this wolf and be gone, you know, for hours and hours, and would come back. You know,
yeah.
And I saw some a big chunky golden retriever talking some smack to him once, and Romeo hooked his nose underneath that dog's chin and just gave a toss of his head, and that dog did a flip in the air and came down on his keister, And he just looked at the dog, stood over it, and walked off.
Well, I mean, it is amazing. And one of the things I remember so distinctly seeing Romeo was there's no mistaking a wolf. I mean, it's not like, oh, there's a dog. There's nothing like that. They're massive, intimidating, tall, lanky. They're a whole other type of creature than those of us that might think, oh, I was scared. I saw a German Shepherd on the trail and I thought it was a wolf.
Right. Right.
You know, it's a whole other thing.
Absolutely. It's like mistaking a Shetland pony for Seabiscuit, you know. It's kind of the same general shape and everything, but no. A wolf is an uber dog. You know, it's bigger, faster, stronger, smarter, everything in this package. And then we get a hold of that wolf, that wolf genome, that lupine genome. And what do? We dumb it down. We make it smaller and easier to handle and fool it into thinking that it's got a good deal with us, which actually
it probably does. Yeah.
Well, actually it does.
Yeah.
Actually, it does. And not to make light of anything, because I'm very much a dog lover, but you have to remember that even a teacup chihuahua is 90-something% genetically identical to a wolf. And it's really amazing that we started off with wolves and we ended up with what we have. But Romeo is sort of that link between those two. And he is just a single example. The wolf that came to lie by our fire must not have happened once, but many times throughout human history for us to have this great arising of dogs all over. Wherever we were, we had dogs going back 30,000 plus years, and that is part of the archaeological record.
Yeah, it's fascinating to think about that. And did the interactions between Romeo that you observed or were part of, did it give you a hint about that a little bit, about those first things that we'll probably never quite know fully, but how dogs became part of our lives?
Well, it more impressed on me over and over again the miracle that it happened at all. I mean, this is one of the probably the single most unique bond between two different species on the planet. And by the way, you have to remember that dogs and wolves are technically the same species according to North American Society of Mammalogists.
Yeah, they can interbreed.
Different branches for sure.
Right.
Yeah, they can have viable offspring. So of course they're the same species technically. And somehow we have this alliance. And I think there always was this thing between wolves and us as apex predators. And yet at the same time, we saw them as obviously as competition, because ever since the rise of civilization, we've been in the business of killing off wolves. We're talking about worldwide. And you can say, oh, no, well, you know, I love wolves and that. Now, if you just look at the whole thing, every place you put up a parking lot or a road or a farm field, there isn't space, or certainly not a pasture full of sheep. There is no space there for a wolf.
And certainly wolves have been vilified as, you know, the bad guy in countless fables and stories throughout human history. So, yeah, you're right. There's a long history of us. While we did domesticate wolves and they were partners with us, and probably in the early stages, they weren't very different than wild wolves. They just had gotten used to us. We definitely also have this... Well, it's a love-hate relationship, and that sort of goes down to this idea of Romeo. You know, one thing I wanted to ask you, Nick, is that your book, A Wolf Called Romeo, is going to be used in the Battle of the Book competition in Juneau. What do you think about this? That's an important book for maybe younger people to be reading.
Well, I'm just incredibly honored that it was chosen, first of all, but I'm going to be doing a couple of programs again from a distance instead of in person as they were meant to be coming up this next week on Monday at Juneau Douglas High School via Zoom. I realized that those kids, if they were 15 years old, they were toddlers at best.
Right.
And I'll probably be talking to some kids who weren't even born yet or right around that time, or were maybe six years old, 5 years old. And this is part of Juno's story. And it's an incredible part of Juno's story. And you think about the fact that here we are having this series of events, which, by the way, I have to say is all due to composer Todd Hunt. It is totally his deal. He started this ball rolling, and that in itself is just so cool. And it's such an honor to Romeo's memory that he is still alive among us. You can go out to the glacier, and there is that bronze plaque on the way to the waterfall. And there he is. And yeah, you know, I know it's taxidermy, but it's what we had left of him. And there he is inside the visitor center.
Yeah, and that's something actually to cover that maybe people aren't aware of, but Romeo is there. That is Romeo. That is what we had left of him to recover that's there in the visitor center.
Yeah, and not only that, that's one of the stories that tour bus operators and people on cruise ships, me included, tell people from somewhere else, because it is such a quintessential Alaska story. This is all about what people think should happen in Alaska. And one of the first things I have to do is offer them a disclaimer is, no, this sort of thing doesn't happen, not even in Alaska. And yet it did.
It just happened this one time that we know of. Yeah. Well, Nick, before I let you go, let's make sure we plug the lecture tonight. It's the Fireside Lecture. It's happening at 7 p.m. And of course, usually these are at the Visitor Center at the Mendenhall Glacier, but because of COVID, which hopefully is starting to wane again, it's been moved to online, which is great. You know, it'll be a way for lots of people to be able to view it and view it just by going to Zoom. So tell me, what are you hoping to cover there, just real briefly?
Well, it's going to be a slideshow basically covering the story of Romeo, because it's something that if I don't get tired of it, I think no one else will. But the important thing to know is what you need to do is to go to the Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center Facebook page, and it's going to be streaming on Facebook. It will also be saved there. If you have a birthday party to go to, like my friend Dr. Vic Walker, who told me he can't go because he's going to a birthday party,
call out.
You can save it for later.
Yeah, that's great. And actually, we were talking to cartographers that were on last week, and I tuned in for a while on Facebook, and it was great. It worked really slick. Everything was really awesome. So in some ways, it's an accessible way for people to make sure they see these lecture series that are always sellouts when they're in person.
Sure.
And it'll be a great way for people to hear about the story and to relive it. And for those of us who weren't here in Juneau or weren't even born yet, maybe, to learn about it. Nick, thanks so much. Really appreciate it. Great to talk to you. Anything else you want to cover real quick before we let you go?
Yeah. Just a couple last plugs. Let's remember that tomorrow at the campground, there's going to be the Romeo Trot ski event.
We're going to talk about that next. We've got them
online.
Right. They're
That's
coming
up
next.
No, so I'm not going to get into that. But also, of course, is the big main event, the wolf music that's going to happen at Juno Douglas High School. And that will be on the 18th and 19th, plus at 7:30 p.m., plus a Sunday matinee at 3 p.m. on the 20th. Okay, so that's going to be a huge deal.
Really cool,
I'm really going to miss not seeing that live. That's what I wanted to come up for.
We're really looking forward to that, and we've been playing public service announcements about that. In fact, just played one right before we got joined you. So, we've got a lot of the Romeo month. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
Oh, it is, of course, the photo exhibit down at the Jack, and also those photos that are not only there to see, but you can bid on them and take them home with you. And there are also a limited edition of photo books that are available for purchase. And all of this helps fund the Orpheus Project, of which Todd Hunt is the linchpin, along with Dr. Emily Kane. And I also want to recognize Matthew Brown and Carrie Howard for all the work they did on this project to make this happen.
All right. Well, Nick, thanks for covering all that. The Jack that's got the photographs, the amazing music that's going to be happening a little bit later this month. And we're not done with Romeo just yet, because right after this, we're going to be talking to how cross-country skiers plan to remember Romeo, and that's going to be happening right when we come back. Nick Jans, thanks so much. It was great seeing you here. I get to see you here in person in the studio, but great to talk to you as well, and thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thanks a lot, Andy.
Okay.
Bye.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com.
Juno Afternoon, I'm Andy Klein, and what better way to remember Romeo, Juno's most famous wolf, than to have a cross-country ski race on a trail. There were a lot of people, and I got to see Romeo on this trail, connected with him. Joining us now is Jordan Tanguay from the Juno Nordic Ski Club, and she's a board member and ski team coach and coordinator. Jordan, thanks so much for joining us. This sounds like a really cool event.
Thanks so much for having me. Yes, we think so, and we're very excited for it.
Yeah. So tell me just a little bit. Obviously, the inspiration was Romeo, but how are you going to make this event especially in a way that especially remembers Romeo?
Yeah. So this event is just part of a huge compilation of really awesome coordination with the Orpheus Project this year. We communicated and wanted to really show who Romeo was and get his name out there and remember him and have fun doing so. So in coordination with that, we are hosting a Romeo Trot, which is going to be right along the same trails that Romeo once roamed, right near the campground and the Mendenhall Lake. And this race is happening right after Nick's interview that you just had. He just talked all about what's happening tonight.
Right.
That's sort of going to leeway into tomorrow's event. And that's going to be tomorrow, February 12th, at the Mendenhall Campground. You can find signs to our starting line, which is going to be right where they park the grooming equipment. But this is going to be a fun community event for everyone to come out. Registration opens up at 9:00, and you can get a Romeo styled bib to wear while you race.
And sounds
then
good.
The race, yeah, and it's a cool little memorabilia. You can put it up on your wall when you get done. But the race itself is going to start at 10:00, and in coordination with the Juno Nordic ski team, the high school and middle school and little guys are going to be making a presence as well. So it's a come one, come all event. We're going to be making our way around the campground loop because unfortunately the lake is not safe to ski on right now at this point in the winter. But we hope that between the ski club and the Orpheus Project, we'll hope to say a couple words about Romeo too and just answer any questions and almost have it as an educational event too.
Well, it's really cool. It seems like such a great, fun, maybe first race for a lot of really little tots or for young kids. I think that, you know, Nordic skiing is such a great lifelong activity to get into. And it's so fun to think about kids, their first race, maybe getting to do one that's all about Romeo.
Yeah. And it's really fun to talk to people about who Romeo is and to see all the books that are published on it. It's just a fascinating time and fascinating resource that we all have at our fingertips. And to get the kids out there moving, getting some miles under them, and then having a good time doing it and learning about something, what could be better?
I remember the first time I heard Romeo. I didn't see him this time, but I was trying ski joring with my dog at the time, who was not that good at that, actually. She was a little she was a little wild. But, I was around that track, and I heard howling happening. And, it was such an amazing, magical time. And an amazing thing, as Nick was just talking about, it was such a unique thing. And great that you're commemorating it. And it sounds like a really awesome event, and I'm sure lots of people are going to show up for it. And is it something you feel like is going to be continued in the future? It sure seems like a great thing to just keep doing.
Oh, certainly, certainly. Yeah, and this race, you know, it's all about getting more people on skis, and then the Orpheus Project is all about making people aware and knowledgeable. And so I think this is just going to be able to continue to grow year after year and really set its foot into a lot of the other Juneau Nordic Ski Club's events that we have every year. We've had several different events, such as the Community Ski and some different ski clinics. And so this will hopefully just add to make our winters more fun.
Yeah, it should. So let's see. It's tomorrow at 11 a.m. Is that when people should show up, or when should people show up?
So, yeah, the details here, you can show up between 9 and 10 o'clock in the morning, and you can write your name down, grab a fancy bib to put on, and then at 10 o'clock, the race is going to start, and you can make your way around. There will be a shorter version for folks who are just willing to do a nice short trot or a longer trot, which will be 2 laps around the campground, and then after that, we will finish up with some awards and potentially some snacks, and then you can be on your way.
Well, speaking of snacks, we're up next, we're going to be talking to a big booster from the Juneau Nordic Ski Club, but that's not why he's joining us. Mark Wheeler is going to be talking to us about some delicious ice cream. But thanks so much, Jordan Tanguay from the Juneau Nordic Ski Club. This sounds like a great event happening tomorrow, the Romeo Trot. It starts at 11, but if you want to go and register and get there and get a bib, you can go between 9 and 10. And all welcome, all ages, all abilities, welcome to go join the trot tomorrow in honor of Romeo the Wolf. Jordan, thanks so much.
Thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Okay.
Sunday afternoons in Southeast Alaska are full of potential. Whether you're heading out for an adventure or spending it quietly at home, whatever you choose, let the Juneau Symphony be your soundtrack. You'll hear new concerts, favorite performances, original compositions, and more from world-class musicians right here in Juneau. Tune in to Sundays with the Juneau Symphony, Sunday afternoons at 1 p.m. on KRNN Juneau, 102.7 FM.
Juneau continues to experience high COVID-19 cases. If you feel sick or have been exposed to someone with COVID, please get tested. Free testing is available through CBJ's drive-through facility 7 days a week, and results generally arrive within 24 hours. Go to juneau.org/COVID-19 or call 907-586-6000 to register. That's juneau.org/COVID-19 or 907-586-6000. This message sponsored by the CBJ.
All right, you know what this music means, right? Because so far on this Juneau afternoon, we've been whetting your appetite for all kinds of things, like from fireside chats to cross-country ski races, but our show would not be complete. Our Food Friday-focused show would not be complete without Foodie Friday. And Mark Wheeler is here from COPA. He's our guest, and he's provided me, actually, it's right here. Rhonda just brought it in into the studio. I guess this is okay to have in the studio. I've got 3 different ice cream flavors here. Mark, thanks so much for joining us. How you doing, man?
Good. I was just kind of panicking because I couldn't hear anything there.
Oh,
just saw your lips moving, and I was like, "Oh my god!"
Oh no. Well, this is we're all dealing with this technology, but technology will never
Zoom very often.
Technology will never solve the ice cream issue. You have to just go ahead and put it in your mouth and eat it in order to really enjoy ice cream fully. But we're trying to employ technology here in this moment of testing and tasting some ice cream. So tell me a little
Are
bit
you
about
armed and ready?
I am. I'm ready. I'm ready to go. I've got it here. Got it here in front of me.
Hey, now real quick though, before we go into ice cream, Jordan forgot to mention the Southeast Snickerdoodle race on Sunday.
Okay.
Copa is donating 117 Snickerdoodles for the race.
Do you think that's enough?
Hopefully.
117? Is that the number you came up with? Okay.
3 fell on the floor. So.
Oh, I see.
Or may have gotten eaten in the process.
Okay. Well, that sounds good, man. So yeah.
10 a.m. on Sunday. It's a skate race and classic all in one.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, that sounds great. And then we just wanted to let's go ahead and taste one of these. You, of course, are always experimenting with new flavors. That's one of the coolest things about COPA is that you guys are always never shying away from trying a new flavor. So what I'm looking at here, what's kind of a new interesting flavor that you want to feature?
Well, so we are last year we started this new club called the Flavor Seekers Club.
Okay.
And it's kind of a subscription service. So you pay for a annual subscription, and every month
it's like a pint of the pint of the month club kind of a thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
But it's exclusive flavors that we've never made before.
I see.
And you can only get it if you join the club. So it's pretty fun. Like, I used to make a lot of wacky flavors when they first started the club, but then you kind of figure out what sells and what doesn't sell.
Yeah, you got to be in business too. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So this kind of lets us stretch our legs a little bit, and is a lot of fun. So we have two flavors for you, and we're still taking memberships. We still have a few left in our batch size.
There's one here that I'm looking at that I know I think I'm going to love, because I love Earl Grey tea. It's my it's my favorite kind of tea to drink. So this one I'm looking at here, the bergamot.
So bergamots are a sour orange.
Okay.
They are nasty.
Really?
Like, if you try to eat one, it's so sour and so bitter that I tried to make sorbet with them before, but I couldn't do it. So we use just the zest from the bergamot, because the essential oil from bergamots is what makes Earl Grey tea taste like Earl Grey tea.
It smells like Earl Grey tea, kind of. It has that citrusy aroma, you know?
Yeah, so every year we make a bergamot ice cream, which is one of my favorite ice creams. Usually our ice creams are really bold flavors, but this is very subtle. It's like a floral kind of citrusy flavor, and I just love it. But so for the Flavor Seeker flavor for February, I made a bergamot ice cream, and then I made a black tea caramel with Ceylon, Uva, and Assam teas.
I'm telling you something.
So it's kind of...
This is, I've jumped ahead to eating, and this is awesome. I love this. Oh my gosh.
So I made this, and then my cook tasted it. He's like, oh, this is, Isaiah was like, this is like a London Fog, and which I hadn't really thought about, but yeah, the cream, the milk, London Fog. But
it's fantastic. I love it. So is this just the ice cream? This doesn't have that special topping on it.
No, it's an ice cream, and then there's a swirl of caramel that I made with
black tea. Okay, now I'm looking at it. I see it now.
So the caramel is it's kind of like a tannin. You can't eat a lot of the tea, but you get some of that tea flavor.
Always good radio just to hear a guy eating. Sorry about that, folks. But that
need more crunch, though.
This is hard to stay away from. It's amazing. Okay, that's the bergamot.
Okay, that's delicious,
and that's only if you're a member of the Flavor of the Month.
That's right.
Okay,
that's right.
And now the other one.
And so you get 12 flavors plus a bonus pint for $125. So okay. The other flavor is a cardamom ice cream.
Oh wow! Okay, beautiful.
Which I've never messed with cardamom before.
It kind of looks like you can see that it's ground up in there. It's got a spice that's ground up in there, like almost like looking at like a vanilla bean flavor, the way it looks. Oh yeah, a very spicy kind of aroma, fragrant.
And then I made a honey caramel ribbon. Honey caramel is really fantastic. It's really easy to make.
Now, what is that? What goes into making honey caramel? Just cooking down honey?
Well, yeah, you cook the honey a little while, then you kind of start your caramel sauce.
Mm.
And it's kind of a nice texture. It's kind of a smooth caramel.
Boy, this is also great.
Yeah, I like cardamom. Nice. And we made some cardamom syrup, so we're selling cardamom lattes at Kobo, which are really good.
I mean, it reminds you so much of it's interesting because cardamom almost has a savory characteristic to it, you know.
Uh-huh.
But
it's not like a warming spice.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I forgot. There's orange in that too. There's that honey caramel has got some orange.
I see a little flecks of orange, zest in it. Zest. Yeah,
a little orange zest.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah, so if you're making ice cream, the zest is where it's at. Zest is really going to give you a lot of flavor in your ice cream.
And does it take a lot, or does it take a lot of zest to flavor the ice cream, or do you think it's better to err on the side of small? Yeah.
But what we do is we zest whatever citrus into our ice cream base, and then we let it sit overnight, kind of steeps in the ice cream.
I see. Oh, man, it's really good. Okay, now the last flavor.
So the last flavor I wanted to touch on, well, that's kind of a mixed flavor.
It is, because you got to get down to the... It says vanilla bean on the top, but it's not vanilla bean on the bottom of it.
So I'm kind of a I kind of don't like to throw anything away. So when we make ice cream, there's always a little bit left over. So I put a little bit in a jar and then I top it up next time with a different flavor. So that's vanilla with deep chocolate on the bottom. And I wanted to talk about chocolate.
Yeah, I have to eat through the vanilla. I'm eating through the vanilla to get to the chocolate.
So Valentine's Day is coming up, and I think our chocolate.
This is the best show ever, by the way. This is the best show I've ever done. This is delicious. All right, go ahead.
The chocolate ice cream, like when you buy most chocolate ice cream in the store, it's made with cocoa flour.
Right.
It's made with cocoa powder, and our chocolate we make with cocoa powder and real chocolate. So it's richer than a normal chocolate. It's got the cocoa butter in there.
It's incredibly rich. I have gotten down into the chocolate at this point, and it is really rich, smooth. It's like eating a chocolate bar. You know, so almost that melty.
We use egg yolks. We use egg yolks in the chocolate, so it's kind of a custard. But if you're interested, we have we have the recipe on our website, copa.co. Go down to the bottom, it's recipe collection. You can check that out. And maybe I think Rhonda might post the link to the recipe on the website. So, you know, nothing says I love you like chocolate.
Oh, man. Right? So that's great. That's a great tip. What a fun thing to make homemade specialty ice cream, or maybe just take a shortcut and just buy it from Copa. I don't know. You know, you could do that too, right?
You can buy it at the grocery store too. Mm-hmm. We're selling in Foodland IGA, Super Bear IGA, Rainbow Foods, Panhandle Produce. And we have a few Valentine's treats up our sleeve. We're selling some really cute heart-shaped ice cream cakes for Valentine's Day. We have a few of those left. And we're going to have some raspberry ice cream sandwiches on Monday and a lot of fun baked goods as well. So
it all sounds awesome.
Have fun.
Mark, thanks so much for feeding me, first of all, today. I love the ice cream. So delicious. And just we're so fortunate to have this incredibly wonderful gourmet, not just ice cream, but coffee shop right downtown, right in the flats there. It's such a great spot that you're in and such a great gathering spot for folks. And it feels like
We got seats now.
Yeah,
seats
are back.
Today we had people in the cafe. We got like five tables.
It feels like we can start doing it again. We can start getting back there again. And it's just, Copa, I'm sure, is one of the places that people have been missing so much, going and just hanging out, getting a great cup of coffee, seeing friends, and something that we can do again. Mark, thanks so much. Really appreciate it.
Can I say one more thing?
Sure, absolutely.
I see your Alaska Seaplanes logo there on your sweatshirt. We are selling ice cream in Sitka now. And shipping in Alaska Seaplanes, and maybe other ports coming up soon. But it's kind of exciting. We've been around 8 years, and this is the first time we've sold ice cream outside of Juneau.
That's really exciting, and I know at Seaplanes, they're really happy to be helping out getting ice cream around Southeast Alaska. What more happy a thing to do than to get ice cream out to around some surrounding communities out in Southeast Alaska? Well, Mark, thanks so much.
Thanks, Andy.
Really appreciate your time. Yeah, great to talk to you too. And thanks again. And boy, that was some good stuff. All right, appreciate it, man.
Home, huh?
Yeah, a little bit. Bye-bye. That's right. Bye. Well, you know, behind every dress at the Juneau Wearable Arts Extravaganza, there's a story, and you're about to hear one from one of the designers that's been there since back when I was hosting Wearable Arts a long time ago. Jessica Hood's with us. Jessica, how are you doing?
I'm doing good.
Yeah, I remember so well the pop-top dress that you designed, that 2014, I think, Wearable Arts, maybe, a while ago
that
now.
That was our very first year.
Yeah.
Our very first year was pop tabs. I was inspired by a bracelet online and just went from there.
And it ended up looking like a suit of armor, but still slinky and super bright colored. And it was a really cool thing. And you've stuck with it. Tell me about why. What it's so much work to
it
do
is,
these things,
every
right?
Year but... Every year I get super excited about it, and then I get about halfway into it, and I go, oh my gosh, I thought this year was going to be easier, and sure enough, it ends up being the same amount
right.
of work every single
I thought I had this figured out.
right.
Well, is that part of it? I mean, part of it, it seems like, obviously, a big part of Wearable Art is that you don't do the same thing every year. You don't use the same, you know, you branch out, you do different things, and I'm sure there's just different challenges with every material, every design.
Yeah, definitely. I definitely like challenge myself every year. I have been branching out to different materials. I did a lot of pop tabs in the beginning, and now I am moving towards other items. This year it's trash bags. 1 year I did buttons. The process is always, I've got this image in my head. I kind of sketch it out, but I usually go with what's going on in my mind, and it kind of flows from there.
And then, of course, the
theme. And some things change.
The theme of the wearable art sometimes, I'm sure, is a cue. I remember one, a kind of a red one that you did for, I think it was Renaissance was maybe the theme. And it was a
woven.
Yeah, my
sister Amy and I did it.
Yeah, it was kind of like a herring, I don't know if a herringbone is right, but like a woven, almost like you'd weave a basket.
Right. That year we did painter's canvas, and we ended up sewing painter's canvas and painting it, hand painting the whole dress. So we had a white one and a red one, and they were like dueling dragons on stage. It was a lot of fun. We went with more of the fairy tale theme of the Renaissance period.
So this year it's Oceanic Overtures. So what was the cue? What did that cue off for you there?
My initial thought was that every time my husband and my kids and I go out and we explore, we get really frustrated with the amount of trash we see when we're out and about, and a lot of it's plastic just because it flies out of truck beds really easy, or people litter, and we end up bringing a bag with us to pick up after other people, and it's just become sort of a habit every time we go out to just grab things as we hike along or go fishing. And this year I chose plastic because it's one of the biggest ones that lasts for a really long time, and forever you're finding it in the soil. I dig up things in my yard and I still find pieces of garbage from previous people and things like that. And it gets a little crazy to think of how fast it can scatter around town.
Yeah. And so that was this mostly plastic then that you gathered on beaches to kind of fit into that theme? Or?
No, I had a couple of boxes of trash bags at home and we're trying to get rid of them. We're moving towards biodegradable ones. And so I figured I might as well make a piece of art out of it so I can have it for a long time. And it'll be used in future times, maybe for Halloween or for sure. Exhibits, things like that. And so the actual piece is titled The Forever Dress this year, just because I know that it will last a really long time.
A little bit of a commentary there as well about us and thinking about our use of plastics, I think, as well. That's a really good name. So, What is it that keeps you coming back? What is it that where you decide I'm going to dedicate this amount of time and this is the way I want to spend my next 3 months or whatever it is that it takes?
Right. Well, the winters here are long, so
yeah, that's true.
Just the weather. The past few years, it has been a really good escape for me to sort of dive into my art projects and to get caught up on some old art projects. And this one, I get really inspired and excited about because I get to share it with people. And a lot of the times it's hard for artists to get their work out there and have a platform to show it off. And being able to put it on somebody and have it move around, and it's just really cool.
Yeah. Speaking of cool, of the past dresses and outfits that you've made, do you have a favorite? Do you have one that sticks out in your mind as, boy, this is that one I really, you know, achieved what you were trying to do? Or how do you think about them? Yeah.
Yeah, my sister, she had breast cancer, and so I did a piece called Still I Rise, and it was completely made out of buttons, and the dress was pink to bring awareness to breast cancer, and it was just really emotional. I had a lot of fun making it, and I still think of it, and it's very empowering, and I got a lot of response from that and gave a lot of people some encouragement to get through what they're going through, and it was really cool.
Yeah, that's cool. You know, at that we were talking about that 2014 dress that was made of the tops of cans, the little tabs of cans. Did you take that dress other places as well? Did that go beyond Juneau?
It did. It went to the Fiber Arts Festival up in Anchorage, and we ended up placing first there. That was a crazy experience to be able to get an opportunity to go to a bigger city like Anchorage and get a really good welcoming from them. It was fantastic. They were so great. When the stage was different, it was nice to see an outside experience compared to the one in Juneau. Juneau's definitely a huge show compared to other places even.
Yeah, I speaking as someone who was kind of on the inside of that for a number of years, boy, it's a huge effort. You know, it is amazing. And I know that one of the things that's always talked about is the idea of really transforming Centennial Hall so that when you walk in, you don't feel like you're in Centennial Hall or even Juneau. You know, you feel like you're at some amazing event, fashion show, something like that.
Yeah, I love that aspect. And it's fun because we don't really get to see the backdrop until a couple of days before. And so it's fun to see how your piece is going to meld into that atmosphere.
Yeah, and that idea, a big part of the show that people maybe take for granted is all the choreography that goes into how you present the piece of work.
Yeah, our director and all of the backstage people, they're just amazing and they're so hands-on, and the amount of help they give people is just hours and hours and hours of their own time. And so we're all very grateful that they can set that aside and make it such a successful show.
Yeah, everyone takes on their part of it to really kind of bring it all together as one big coherent show as much as possible. I mean, one of the things that's so fun about the show is that it tries to have a theme and be coherent. But on the other hand, you're showcasing all these different artists, wildly varied works, you know? So it's a fun thing where it's a big show that goes together, but at the same time, it's so varied and so it is.
And yeah. Margot's amazing. I'm not a dancer. I am not good at dancing. And just seeing some of the pictures and watching the videos, I'm like, look, I do know how to move my body in like certain ways and make those pieces come alive. And I'm not huge at being on stage. It makes me really nervous. But some years I just get outside of my comfort zone and go do it anyways. And she's really, really awesome at supporting and making you feel a little less scared.
Yeah. Now, the year I was involved with it, I think that maybe you weren't the one modeling it that year. Is that right?
I did not do the first year. That was two of my old friends and they were great to sort of take on that whole project as a first timer.
But since then you've decided to model yourself as well, which does seem like that's a whole other thing. And then now you're performing.
Right, I did 3 years of it.
Yeah, right.
I've done
right.
3 years of modeling, and it's just, it's so much more work.
Right. Yeah, all of the figuring out the music, figuring out how you want to choreograph it, figuring out what it is, how you can even move. A lot of the dresses really are constrictive, or you have to figure out what you can and can't do inside them.
Yes, definitely. My dress this year is super heavy. I haven't weighed it, but I'm going to when it's finished, and I'm hoping that my model doesn't get too hot in it because it is made of plastic.
What's your guess on how much it weighs?
Currently, I think it's probably upwards of 40 pounds.
Oh, okay.
So it's pretty heavy. It's like a small child.
It's significant, right. It's not heavy baggage on Alaska Airlines, but it's close.
Right.
It's a full bag. Right. Well, that's really cool. Well, do you have details on how people can, are tickets still available? Is there a will call or is there a way people can still get into the show?
Yeah. Saturday is sold out. They do have some standby tickets, but I believe they're gone. And so I don't want to say that there are any for Saturday, but there are still seats for Sunday. And there's always the online virtual as a pay as you can. It's available, I think, till early March for the one that's virtual as well for people that can't make it to the live show.
Tell me about the virtual one. Is it just a filming of the live show, or is there more to it?
You actually get to watch the first show, so it's the same time, and there you get to watch it as it goes down the stage on Saturday night. So you can watch it live, or you can purchase and watch it a little later.
Oh, okay, great. So even if you're not in the area or can't be involved this weekend, there is a way to still be able to participate in a way and view the really cool creativity that's happening coming out of Juneau.
Yeah, and it's fun because I like to reach out to my friends and family that live afar, and they can kind of see what I'm up to and what all my friends and people are up to as well on that weekend, because I'm always bragging about how fun it is and a little chaotic in my lifestyle at that time because I tend to take on too much.
Right. Well, tell me, I don't want
to
give...
It's fun to let them know where I've been.
I don't want to give away your design or anything, but can you tell me a little bit more? We know it's made of plastic, but can you tell me a little bit more about what the look of it is or what you were trying to convey in the shape and the way it moves?
Sure, yeah. It's a long, large ball gown. I would give it like a wedding dress style. It's very flowy at the bottom. I made a whole bunch of plastic pom-poms and attached them together to create the whole bottom, so it's fluffy and it's It's just really big. It fits just like a ball gown, and it has fused plastic, so I didn't use any stitching on the whole project. It's all fused together. That was kind of a cool part of it, to be able to create something without thread and just use plastic.
Right. Well, thanks so much for joining us, Jessica. It's really great to talk to you again and to hear your progress, what's been happening since the last time I got to see one of your works. And it's so nice to think about wearable art being live again and having people be able to view it and getting the energy of the crowd and all that great stuff that happens at wearable art. It's going
to
be
great. It definitely adds a special touch to it.
No. Yeah, I'm
sure. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. That's Jessica Hood, and she's bringing her Forever Dress to the stage this weekend. And I think, Jessica, we can almost hear the applause right now. Right? We can almost.
Right.
It's going to be a great, it's
oh,
going to
be
a great
nice.
Event. All right. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Well, that'll do it for Juno Afternoon, broadcast from the Lingit Ani on KTOO 104.3 FM, Juno. It airs here live at 3 o'clock, and we're on Tuesday through Friday. And we repeat at 7 o'clock p.m. right here on 104.3 FM as well. You can also listen online at ktoo.org anytime. Juno Afternoon is a production of the KTOO Arts and Culture team, and our theme music is by Indian Agent. To listen to interviews, to see links to anything we discussed, or to be on the show yourself if you want, you can check out our website at ktoo.org/JunoAfternoon. I'm Andy Klein. I'm your host for today. Thanks for joining me, and have a great weekend, everyone.